Hugh and Cameron Gogus will not be with us tonight.
If you'd like, I could text Sean and see if he's forgotten about us.
No,
oh. No, there he is. Right here.
There he is.
Hi, Sean.
Hi.
All right, then. It is 5:02 on December 1st, 2020, and I will call to order the Pacific City Joint Water and Sanitary Authority Board of Directors business meeting. We are meeting via video conference calls, and we will proceed. I'll call the roll. Ann Price.
Here.
John Carlton.
Here.
For the record, Tom Donahue and Cameron Gogus will not be joining us. Item three, a slight change to the agenda. We are going to look at approving the November 3rd, 2020 business meeting minutes. Are there any comments or corrections to the meeting minutes?
I didn't have any. I'll move that we approve the November 3rd, 2020 business meeting minutes.
It has been moved and seconded that we approve the November 3rd, 2020 business meeting minutes. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Unanimously, that motion has been approved. Item four, financial report. Accounts payable for November 3rd, November 15th, and November 30th of 2020. Any questions on the accounts payable?
Oh, hearing none, I'll move that we approve the accounts payable for November 3rd, November 15th, November 30th of 2020.
Don, what's your mic on?
I'll second it.
Thank you. It has been moved and seconded that we approve the accounts payable for November 3rd, November 15th, and November 30th of 2020. All in favor, signal by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Motion passes unanimously. Thank you. Item 4B, fiscal year report 2021. Any questions for the authority manager?
I have none either.
Moving along, item five, manager's report. Kirk?
Okay, I'll start with the COVID-19 impacts. There's really not been any significant changes. Our operations staff has remained healthy over the last month, and our office staff continues to work remotely when practical. We've actually been quite productive doing that, and we're basically following the Oregon Health Authority guidelines. We're making sure that we're keeping our distances, and we really haven't had any problems. So I'm happy to answer any questions that the board might have. Anne?
I did have just a kind of a general information question. A lot of the meetings I've been listening into and hearing some of our local state representatives have talked about the OSHA rules and how they've changed and the guidelines are different. And this is, in my words, it sounds from their presentations like the OSHA regulations are changing every 10 days. I'm sure that's an exaggeration, but I'm just curious from our standpoint if that has been a challenge to us in maintaining compliance with OSHA. Is it clear to you and to our staff what we need to be doing to comply with those regulations?
Yes. I think I mentioned it last month that I've developed some COVID-19 exposure risk assessment and an infection control plan that followed the guidelines and requirements of OSHA. So that was actually effective November 2nd, 2020. And I've got it, just happened to have it sitting on my desk because I intend to update it with a couple of minor changes that we will need to make since that initial document was drafted. But no, it's been reasonable for us to comply and no problems.
Okay, so it hasn't been confusing because there have been changes, frequent changes to it. And maybe I'm hearing some overreaction to some things that are going on. So I just was concerned about you and the management and our staff and how that was working. So thanks for going through that again, Kirk. I'm glad to know it's stable.
And I think part of why it's easier for us to comply to some of these requirements is because we're not dealing with the general public quite like some employers would require. So.
Okay.
But I'll keep the board posted if we do ever experience some challenges meeting those OSHA requirements.
It require you implementing some written plans, though, right?
Yes, and that's what I developed last month.
Thank you.
Hearing no other questions, I did want to point out to the board that the wastewater treatment plant project has been an ongoing project for several years, and we're wrapping things up. The wastewater treatment plant disc filter was completed this summer, and the final payment wasn't made until we actually completed all of the performance testing. So that has all been proven to be successful. Michelle and I recently met with Parametrics and Rural Development to coordinate a final pay request. And I think I heard from Michelle earlier today that she's received notice that we should be receiving our final payment, is it, Michelle, for the grant?
No, it's the final one through MSI and all of the peripheral machinery. There will be one more only for Parametrics for the engineering. So, but MSI, all the contractors have been paid 100%. So we're waiting on one final invoice from Parametrics.
Thank you. And I set you up. I knew that, yeah, we are waiting on that Parametrics payment, and it's going to be a small payment. But Rural Development has agreed to pay for anything like that that would be submitted through January and maybe even February if need be. But we're definitely taking advantage of the entire grant funding that was provided to us.
So do I understand that we're leaving very, very little money on the table in terms of our grant because of the relationship that you have had with Parametrics and Rural Development and have been able to show them how there have been some smaller pieces coming along after we thought we were complete and those have been applicable so that we've gotten the grant money for that?
Yes, that would be correct. I don't know if it was a result of me personally bringing those to their attention, but as a team, both Michelle and I and Mike Kishka from Parametrics were able to come up with some additional reimbursement items that were considered by Rural Development, and so therefore we anticipate receiving even more of our grant funding. Michelle, do you have a rough estimate as to what the remaining balance will be at this point?
Well, the remaining balance of the contingency fund, which is what we're rolling off of, is only about $18,000. So that's good. However, during the time that we've been on the whole project, we made $146,000 in interest on top of the grant money that we had to use before grant money. So I do believe that out of the 1.9 million, there may be 80 to 90 left on the table, which there's nothing we can do, except that looking for small items that truly were reflected in the project, such as Xylem doing some programming for us, which is another $4,000 that they haven't billed us yet, so I can't do anything with it. So Rural Development is going to work with us on that. Any small items that we can pull out of our hat that we're directly related to, but maybe not part of the original bid process, they are going to allow us to submit that. So we are working really, really hard, going back and looking at every little dot and I and T. So
I'd like to say on behalf of our customers, thank you for your financial acumen and your ability to find those items and call them out so that our authority benefits from that, as do our customers.
Well, it's a joint effort on everybody's part. We all talk about it at work, so.
Well, and I think our previous manager as well.
Yeah, joint effort there.
I was just going to add that it seems like from the inception of this project, we've had mutual respect and trust between the authority and Rural Development. And it's been a very good and productive relationship. And so to have it wind up in this situation where we are able to get these smaller projects done, and it's just, I think it's a direct result of that relationship that's been built over years and carried through right to the end with integrity and mutual trust. So kudos.
They've been great to work with.
And that's not something you hear often about federal government agencies. So I'm especially pleased to hear you say that.
I would also
like to point out, I think the authority was very fortunate to have a contractor that took pride in the work that they performed, because we recently completed our punch list and walked through the plant and took a lot of photographs, and it really was done. It was assembled and manufactured extremely well, so we were fortunate to have a good contractor.
Good.
And other than that, the only thing on the graphs that I'd like to point out on the manager's report is the unaccounted for water did go up considerably in November. And I believe that it has something to do, and I've looked at previous year's trends, and it always seems to climb up in the fall. And I think there's a correlation between how much we're running wells. As we start to produce more well water, I think we become less efficient of accounting for all of our produced water. I think we do account for our well flushing water, but there's a significant amount of backwash water and flush water that occurs out of Horn Creek that I don't believe I'm capturing yet. So once I identify those volumes, I hope to get that non-revenue water or unaccounted for water back down to 10% or lower. So I'll continue to keep a close eye on that. Anne?
So when I was coming home from someplace the other day, I'm just driving on Broughton Road and I saw somebody, one of our guys, I don't know who it was, and he couldn't see them, but they were flushing one of the yellow standpipes. And is that the kind of water you're talking about? It might not be accounted for in this,
projects? We track our flushing water, that is the type of water that I'm talking about. I think there's greater volumes than that, though, that we flush when the Horn Creek Water Treatment Plant is sitting idle for a while. Our highest priority is to maintain high water quality and good chlorine residuals in our basins. And so if it's offline for a significant amount of time, we have to do some circulating and some flushing of that water. So I think that's the area I'm going to look at more closely in the next month or two and gain a better understanding of what percentage of our produced water that might be. I've already looked and noticed that our backwash water is what it's referred to in the state reports, but it's really flush water for cleaning our membranes. And so it's turned out to be a more significant volume than what I thought it would be. So again, I want to look at that a little more closely and see if there's ways we could even reduce the amount of flushing that's needed.
We'll stay tuned.
And
question for you, Kirk.
Yes.
On those graphs, and I know this may be getting a little detail oriented, but given the 2-week freeze that's been in effect, did you notice anything in the last kind of 10 to 12 days? Was the beginning of November abnormally high and then it dropped off at the end? Or, I mean, it definitely looks like there's, you know, November and October were fairly consistent, although there was an increase over last year. Was that anything that was noticeable to you all or not?
I didn't see a significant change throughout the month. It looked pretty steady from what I recall. One thing about this board meeting being on the 1st of December, I'm glad you brought that up because I wanted to point out that the last several days of the monthly report were estimates on my part. And so for the produced water, I used an average daily flow of 200,000 gallons a day. Having seen the real data this morning, that seems to be very close. So I don't think it's going to change any of these graphs enough for anyone to visually see any difference, but I will update it with new data. The one thing I do have good record of is sewer flows on a daily basis. I could look into that closely, Sean, if I see any variations that stand out other than weekend tourist events. I can certainly let you know.
Yeah, I'm kind of curious as to the impact, you know, if any of the governor's, you know, freeze order had any kind of an impact, or if the influence of visitors is so great that it kind of mitigates any impact that you know the governor's restrictions might have.
Mm-hmm. Well, if you look at the wastewater influent flow on the first page, you could see our wastewater flows, and we talked about this last month. Our wastewater flows are significantly higher than they were a year ago, and even more so the year prior. In November, and some of that could be stormwater influence on the wastewater side. So I didn't see a lot of stormwater infiltration into our sewer system in November, which was really good. But what I am seeing is flows very slightly higher than last year. I have a tendency to think that we're still seeing more tourism this month than we did a year ago this month.
Yeah, that's kind of my thought process with that, is looking at those graphs. I mean, what it kind of just ballpark said to me was that the influence of tourism and people still coming to the coast, vacation rentals, all that kind of stuff, has a greater impact than any of the restrictions that the governor may have put in place.
I agree.
Okay, thank you.
Sure.
once again, Kirk, I'd like to just tell you how much I appreciate this visual of these figures, because it really, for some of us, me in particular, it really helps me literally picture the difference in the increases and decreases. It's a great improvement. I appreciate it.
Great. Thank you.
And I
look at it myself as well, so it works for me. I figured I could pass that on to you.
Yeah.
And that's all I had regarding the manager's report.
All right. Thank you. Item 6, unfinished business. Let's start with the water and sanitation master plan update. Kirk?
Well, the engineers are working diligently to try to meet their completion date of December, which starts today. I don't expect them to be completed until the end of the month, and hopefully it won't extend into January, but that is a possibility at this point. I haven't seen the first draft yet of their report, their final report, but what I have done is worked on some prioritization of capital improvement projects over the next 20 years, and I can share with the board that we've made a very high priority of a water treatment plant expansion project, which I anticipate happening in 2022, if all goes well. We're looking at adding over 20 years, most likely about 10 years down the road, 200,000 gallons of additional water storage. We've got in line about 20 water main replacement projects. Many of them are similar to the projects proposed in 2004. Of course, we've focused on some other major projects, but I think over the next 20 years, water main replacements are going to become more and more necessary and more common for us. Ultimately, I anticipate adding 4 to 5 fire hydrants to our system, which might require some enhancing of the water mains in those neighborhoods to do that. We've also got 2 pump station improvement projects scheduled over the next 20 years. We've noticed a couple of bottlenecks in our system. For example, the water flowing into the 300K tank has to be pumped up to the 600K, but we have only 2 very small pumps that can do that. So as our system grows and the development served by the 600K tank expands, we're going to want to have more pumping capacity to pump water up there. And then there's also some improvements that I'd like to make at the 100K reservoir. So those are the projects that you can anticipate being on included in the master plan. John?
A general observation, kind of going back to something that I've noticed in the past, and I realize this is kind of a pipe dream, but on some of those water main replacement plans, one of my huge pet peeves is when the road department comes in and repaves a brand new road, and then 3 months later some utility's out there hacking it up. So I don't know if there's a way to kind of semi-coordinate any of those things to where if the county is going to repave and go through that effort, if there's a way to replace anything that needs to be done at the same time?
There is a way to do that. I have seen the county provide us a list of paving projects that they were going to do this year, and they basically followed that list of paving projects and did them as they said they would. We didn't have a lot of advance notice, but I will work with the county for next year and see if I could, now that I'm getting to know some folks, I think I can reach out and get that list a little sooner this year. But the county has been very good to work with. We're also sort of fortunate on the water side, particularly, that our water mains are often in shoulder of the road. So we shouldn't have to cut any new asphalt particularly. But it's something we take into account when scheduling water main replacements. If there's road repairs, we could almost look at certain streets and recognize that there's going to be some work there in the future, and it's absolutely necessary. So we'll try to get our work done prior to that. Unfortunately, there's only so many water mains we can replace in a year. It's just an ongoing process typically over a period of about 50 years.
Sure. Thank you. No, I just know that there are some places where something cuts under a road or something goes up, across underneath the road, and, seems like if the county's going to go up and upend it, might be a good time to replace that stuff. So just something I'm thinking about. Thank you.
Yeah, we think the same way. Let's see. I guess I'll move on to electronic water meter purchase. I'm very happy with the way that all came together. I work with our attorney to develop appropriate public posting language. It was posted in the Headline Herald and in the Daily Journal of Commerce to provide statewide posting. I sent letters out with similar language in that posting notice to two of the firms that would be likely to and most interested in providing us meter reading equipment. Neither one of those agencies showed any interest in commenting. They understood what we were doing, and they recognized that the price was not something that they were really convinced that they could compete with. So we've met all of our public notification requirements. Our attorney is very confident that we've done this in a very appropriate and legal manner. So we're at a point now where the board chair and myself can sign an agreement for the purchase off of that contract.
Excellent.
If there's no other questions, that's our update. Our next step is to prepare for installation of replacing the old meters with new meters. There is a 6-week delivery time for the water meters, so we have time, but we don't have a lot of time. So I'm working, I've got some language. Because of the anticipated cost is well below any formal bidding requirement limit, we just need to get some informal quotes from your contractors capable and qualified to do that work. And I will be working this month to get that in place. And then next month I anticipate presenting to the board at least what our intent is in how we're going to proceed to actually perform the work to replace all of our water meters.
And Kirk, is this something that would be impacted? Would that installation process be impacted by the fact that it's winter and likely to be not just colder but wetter and that sort of thing, or is it a pretty really in one way kind of mechanical process? You just sever the pipes and put the new one in and seal them up. Unpleasant in bad weather, but doable.
That, I think that's a good way to describe it. It is unpleasant in bad weather, but it's the type of work that can be performed even in rain. And I think a lot of contractors actually look for this type of work, especially underground contractors look for this type of work in the winter because, for example, if we wanted to replace a water main, one of our highest priority water mains to replace right now is in Rupel. But given the ground saturation in the wintertime, it would physically be impractical for us to do that in the wintertime. So that's got to be scheduled in the summer. I think there are several other roads in our community that are like that as well. And so This is the kind of work that I hope our local contractors would be interested in doing here in the Wintertime. So I think it's a good fit.
All right. Any other, Michelle?
Yeah. Update on the billing and financial software. Michelle?
We had global network support, our IT people. They've already done the server. It's ready to go. We're waiting on Springbrook now, and they're about 2 months out in updating all of our softwares. It's a long procedure to do that many updates at one time. So we're just waiting on them, and we'll turn it over in a day and run parallel for a little bit and go from there.
Excellent.
Any questions? Okay.
I don't know about you all, but that seemed like I'm sure this isn't true for Michelle and Kirk, but that was pretty painless for me. And I think it's going to be a huge improvement. So thank you again.
Yeah, thank you.
All right, item six under unfinished business, item D, in-person community meeting. Any thoughts about this at this point?
Got a comment?
Yeah, Sean, go ahead.
I still think it's something that's important to do. Obviously, cases are ticking up on this COVID thing, so things are getting riskier. I will say that I attended the CAC meeting last month at the community center. And I don't think they did a good job of social distancing. I think the meeting was great, but I don't think they did a good job of social distancing. So, kind of fly on the wall, I think that the only way to do it is to max out the number of guests at 15. There were more than that at the community meeting, and I think that they were not practicing really good social distancing. So, when we decide to do it, I think we're looking at a maximum of 15 guests.
And
I and probably some of you got David Gomberg's newsletter yesterday, and he described in there, and I won't get all the terms correct, but he described the governor's new sort of approach to protecting all of us, and there's a format of declaring certain counties according to risk level. And David said in his newsletter, Representative Gomberg, I should say, said in his newsletter that Tillamook County was at the current time classified as lower risk, and he gave a link to the matrix that they're using from the state for what is permissible activity at what level in the four risk categories that your county might be in. I heard today, I think Kirk, you and I were emailing a little bit, and I think I heard you say that Tillamook County's current status is lower risk, but there is a good chance it's going to be increased to moderate risk. The bottom line getting to all of this is that gatherings indoors, the lower risk category state recommendation is a maximum of 10 people, recommended limit of 4 households. So that, in my mind as I read that, and I searched the matrix to try to find if there was anything about larger venues and that kind of thing, I couldn't see anything that addressed larger venues. It was basically just indoor gatherings. So I'm kind of taking that as, further caution, and we'll keep talking about this every week because we'd like to do something like that. And I appreciate, Sean, hearing your observation. I tuned into that CAC meeting online, but I didn't have a view of the whole room. So I appreciate your observations on that. And I think it points out the difficulty when we're well-intentioned of still not having it be quite what maybe it should be to protect everybody. So to be continued is the bottom line in my mind.
Think, John? So we are now at that moderate category. We're not at the low risk category anymore. So Tillamook County now is at moderate.
Oh, okay.
And so I think what that really suggests when we want to do an in-person gathering is we don't call it a PCJWSA board meeting. We call it a PCJWSA faith gathering. And that way we can have 150 people indoors. It doesn't matter what the social distance restrictions are if we call it a faith gathering. And I am an ordained minister, so, you know.
You are. Yes, I know.
Yeah,
that.
It's definitely doable.
A friend of mine had a shell turkey funeral on Thanksgiving.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, I bet I know who that was.
I think you'd be surprised.
Okay.
Well, I'm glad we can keep our sense of humor through all of this because it certainly is not easy. And just kind of trying to keep some perspective with where Tillamook County is and the rest of the state, in the last month, Tillamook County cases have increased by 41%. However, we and Clatsop County are the only two counties over a population of 8,000 that hasn't had a death yet. The only other counties are under that population, and yet if you look at all the other counties and their rate increases, most of them were up about around 100 to 120% increase in the month, not the 40% that we saw. So I'm pleased that as many people in Tillamook County are as careful as they are and have been, and hopefully that'll continue, that we don't end up with an explosion of cases in Tillamook County or in South County proper. And I'm very hopeful with the news about the vaccines on the horizon, and that may be an option that will change our ability to get together and to do things within the next 4 to 5 months. So we'll keep an eye on that. And at the same time, I think that it would be very good for all of us that we have something substantial to talk with customers about when we get to that point of a meeting. And it looks like our master plan is going to be coming along too. So it may all come together in a very positive way. If it's okay with the rest of the board, I think we'll just keep this item on the agenda each month and check in and see where we're at and move forward as appropriate. Don, does that seem all right to you?
Yeah, I think that's fine. I mean, I think realistically, you know, the first quarter of next year is not going to happen. So, yeah, that's fine. But I think really we're probably looking at, you know, second quarter of next year at the earliest.
Ann?
I think you're probably right, but I also think, and I agree that there's value to keeping it on the agenda so we can make sure that we're consciously reviewing it and talking about the issues in our current conditions. So.
Okay. Thank you. Going on to new business. Kirk, Water Management and Conservation Plan update.
Okay. I recently completed a Water Management and Conservation Plan update. This is one of the first steps required for us to certify one of our major water rights, our largest Horn Creek water right permit needs to be certified by 2025, or a request for an extension will be needed. So I've been working to complete everything that's necessary for us to apply for a certificate of water rights. So this was really one of the first steps. So with that said, I just wanted to show the board that what this Water Management Conservation Plan update really covered was I identified it to the state water resources department. The average monthly withdrawals that we used from each of our water rights that we have allotted to us. We actually have 8 water right permits, 5 for Barn Creek and 3 for the wells. And so I had to sort of identify where our water was being applied as we used over a 5-year period. So it was an extensive process, but it was helpful for me to see actually how much water we have, where those water rights are coming from, and really most importantly at this point, what it's going to take to certify our largest Farm Creek water permit that we have, which allows us to obtain 2 cubic feet per second of water from Horn Creek. So I just wanted to share with the board that that's been done, submitted to the state, and there's still some other steps that we're going to need to do, and I'll keep the board informed as to our progress. We're ahead of the game right now, so we have 3 or 4 years to prepare for this, but at some point we're going to have to make a decision whether we're going to certify those rights in 2025 or whether we're going to need another extension. And I think the master plan will help us make that determination as well. So I'm happy to answer any questions. John?
As a nerd, is that something I could read? I'd be curious to read through that. Is that something you could send to me?
Yeah. In fact, I just remembered, the other thing that I found was interesting in this that was reported, Michelle helped me put this information together, was some of the types of water usage that we had and the volumes that were diverted. But it broke it down into 4 categories, which were residential, commercial, industrial, and other. And you could see what the percentages were, and I think it's going to help us in lots of ways to see where our water is going.
Yeah, so I'd love to nerd out on that.
What I'll do is I'll provide you a copy of that, Sean, or any, or if the entire board is interested, I'm happy to send out copies to the board.
Please.
Okay.
Yeah,
I'll just send it to all the board members.
Anything else on that item? All right. Item 8. Kirk, did you receive any guest comments?
No, I didn't.
All right. Any director comments? Ann?
I had a couple. One of them was tonight at the meeting, we don't have any public comments or guest questions or anything like that. Has there been any uptick in contact from the public in the office on the phone of a general nature? Nothing beyond the routine, you know, how come my bill says this and those kinds of routine questions, which I appreciate. I have those sometimes myself, but that's just an issue that it always kind of floats around in my head. You know, are we having demand out there that we're not satisfying, or are we having, you know, I don't mean not satisfying, but are we having a lot of more demand now than we had 2 months ago for people feeling as though they're out of touch with us or that sort of thing, and it consistently, it doesn't seem that way from month to month. It seems like we're just not foremost in most people's minds right now, as long as the water flows and the toilet flushes.
Exactly.
And the only other comment I have is that as I listen to the news, which I do way too much of, I'll be the first to admit that, I hear constant reference to essential employees, and every time I hear that essential workers phrase, I think of all of you that work for us and keep the water flowing and the sewers working and the plant functioning. And so I just want to say that you're essential workers, or as far as I'm concerned, and I think as far as this community is concerned. And I hope you, maybe you could share that with everybody else tomorrow if you get a chance.
I will do that. And I want to say I'm grateful. Well, I think we're all grateful to still be working as well. And it's great to be able to provide a public service.
Michelle?
I do have a comment. You know, we've been talking about this, the COVID. Tillamook County is not providing the testing that I think other counties are providing. We had an employee want a test after coming back from out of state, and they were told no because they had no signs of or symptoms. And so when we're looking at Tillamook County and how many cases we have, we don't know for sure because we can't get tested. And if we are essential workers, we should be able to get those tests. The people on the television get tested every single day before they can go on set. And we can't get one.
John?
That seems ridiculous to me because I know people in this county who are not essential workers who have gone in and gotten tested. So there's some sort of disconnect there for sure. And that's, I agree with you, that's unacceptable. So I don't know what that disconnect there is, but that's ridiculous. That maybe Kirk needs to make a call to Annette Pampush at the health department and have a conversation.
Yeah. Thanks.
I'm happy to do that, Sean. And I'm glad that you brought that up, Michelle, because I did have some info and I gained some knowledge today. Our experience was because he was not showing symptoms, they didn't want to test him to come back. So he had to self-quarantine at home, and he ended up using an additional week of vacation time. And although that was part of his intent on the onset, it's still not ideal for us. But one of the things I've learned about, I attended the Chamber of Commerce meeting today, and there was a representative from my notes are terrible to go off.
Was it the Tillamook Health Department?
Yeah, from the Tillamook Health Department. And they explained that there's a new test called Biomax BMax now that really will only evaluate whether or not you have, I mean, it only works if you have symptoms. And in our case, we didn't. Now, what the clinic had told our employee was that they had a shortage of the type of test they would need if you're not showing symptoms. And so I think that's what we need to encourage our county to provide that more as an option. So that critical workers can return to work in a more timely manner.
John?
Yeah, and that's unacceptable to me, and I'm happy to reach out to our county commissioners if you need me to. I know for a fact that there are people here in Pacific City who have gone to the county health department and gotten a test because they want to go to Hawaii for a vacation. And so if our employees who are essential workers are not able to get a test, but a regular old Joe Blow citizen can get a test to go to Hawaii, that's unacceptable to me. And I'm not being critical of you, Kirk. I'm just saying that is a phone call I will make to David Yamamoto in a heartbeat.
And
I'm right there with you, Sean.
You guys doing it. And I'll do it as well. Probably should have prior to tonight, but... yeah, this was our first experience with that type of denial. So I think it is something that if we take it lightly, it's just going to continue to happen. So, yeah, I'm happy to also to make some calls and try to correct this situation because, yeah, we're too far into this pandemic for us to still be unable to test.
Well, on the community update meeting on Friday mornings that the county commissioners have every week, Marlene, I'm not coming up with her last name, I want to say Putnam, She's there every week, and she speaks to these issues as well as they.
She'll be back.
Can I jump in real quick while we're waiting for her to come back?
Sure. Tiny meeting.
Oh, she's back.
That's okay. I'm just saying community meeting on Friday morning is an opportunity for the health department to comment on things that have come up to them. So if we bring these things up now to the county, to those folks, we might see some comments at the Friday meeting at 8 o'clock.
Don?
Just to throw one more thing out there, like I said, I'm happy to have that conversation. And I don't know when this incident happened, but I will say I do think it is important to play devil's advocate on the other side of things. You know, given the state that we're in now, you know, if we've got an employee traveling out of state, you know, the governor is recommending people not do any travel. So, you know, I don't know when that travel happened, but I do think there's a fine line there, and we got to be careful about that.
And I can assure the board, in case any of you speak to someone that I don't, we did have justified cause for that. It was a family emergency. So, other than that, I think we'd have to be a little more patient. But in that case, it was a good example of how things may not work as well as they should.
Michelle, you had a comment?
No. Kirk reiterated what I wanted to say, that it was a family emergency, so.
Kirk, I'd also like to add, if you're going to be talking about testing, I think it's very important when we begin to look at vaccines that our staff is considered essential workers also and is on that first line of getting those vaccines, because if one of our staff inadvertently picks up the COVID and doesn't have symptoms but spreads it to others, it could create a situation where we don't have enough people to operate the authority. And so right now they're beginning to look at distribution of vaccines. We're going to disappear in South County in that system because we have no long-term residential places, and we only have one healthcare facility. And I think they need to look a little further than just those two in terms of keeping our communities operational last month of this pandemic.
Understood. And I think, you know, all water and sanitation operators and providers are in the same situation as us. I'll look at our peers, the American Water Works Association and the Water Environmental Federation, and see what they're doing to actually protect us in the field, in our field.
And I think that's particularly important in the rural districts, because if you have a city district and you lose 10% of your staff because it happens in one area, but you've got 100 employees, you can probably cover operations. If we lose those same five people in our situation, we can't cover operations very well. So I'm hoping that they'll pay some attention to the rural situation and what our needs may be different than the larger organizations of the same kind in different locations.
Gotcha.
Any other comments?
Michelle, was that you?
The kittens just woke up.
It was either Salt or Pepper, one or the other.
It was Pepper.
What a nice way to end our meeting. It is 5:55, and I will adjourn. Thank you all, and it's good to see you.